This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
All right, what is going on, people? Welcome in to the first episode, I guess, of the new edition of Believe in Mets. I'm Casey Stern, your host. My guest today, my guy, SNY TV, of course, MLB Network Radio as well, former Mets GM Jim Duquette. You also can catch us on this episode on Unfiltered, where you can get all my other podcasts on Unfiltered with Casey Stern. Same thing on Instagram, YouTube, Twitter at Casey Stern or X or whatever the case is. And of course, at Jim Duquette GM as well. I got that right, didn't I? Did I do that right?
At you got it right. Okay.
All right,
good. Yes.
Duke, we get to be Mets-centric on this show, which is fun, yeah. And I'm really looking forward to this. So we'll talk a lot of Mets. And I want to start by asking you, kind of open-endedly, are you honestly as into the OMG song by Mr. Candelita, Jose Iglesias, as I am? Is there something wrong with me that I actually think it's good? Like I've been listening to it in the car with the kids. Yeah. Like, am I, let's be fair. Like, you're Simon Cowell. The song is good or not?
I think it's good. It's catchy. It sticks in your head. Like, I literally, after watching Iglesias on Friday announce, you know, he's been singing it but it was kind of the more they released it right officially on Friday, and he's out in front of the fans singing after the game. They win the game, like the whole vibe, and the players are going out there and they're all fired up. And it's like in my head, I couldn't get rid of it for over the course of the day on Saturday. Like, yeah, it's a catchy song, and it's one of those things that I think has a little bit of staying power. Obviously, it's helped with the chemistry of the team, but it's a pretty good song. I'm with you.
I think it's good. I'm wondering, like, is it just because I'm a Met fan?
Right.
Is this going to become like Timmy Trumpets, where even for me that got a little bit old, if we're being fair?
Right.
Never old is the fact that we are presented by our good friends at BetOnline, number one source for your sports betting needs all season. Baseball, golf, soccer, all the big fights, UFC, MMA, and more. All the stats, every matchup, live odds, and spreads while they're being played as well when the game's over. Get all the casino and card games, poker, and more, 150 slot games as well. Get over to the website today. Get in on the action. Promo code is BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V. You'll get a 50% welcome bonus and credit on your first deposit for up to $250. BetOnline is where the game starts here. I want to kind of continue on with the vibes, and obviously the song be a part of that. The Lindor meeting, you know, we went from the Lopez, you know, situation where we're sitting there and you've got, you know, gloves being thrown and people talking about, you know, how bad the team is. And it was a that's so Mets kind of a feel again, like we're a joke.
Right.
How did we get here? Like, put a finger on the song could be part of it, the vibe, but like from your lens, how did we turn things around as a franchise seemingly so quickly to get to a point where now they sit a game under 500, two out of the wild card?
You know, the I think when you have a team meeting, and from the sounds of it, you know, there was a lot of guys that spoke. Lindor called it. You know, JD Martinez had something that kind of resonated with me when he said, you know, everybody was expecting us to lose. So what do we have to lose? Let's just go out and play fun and just do what we do best. And you know, let's just see where things go. And that takes a lot of pressure off, you know, when it comes to expectations and everything else. That starts, you know, that's number one. You know, picking it after the Dodgers series, you know, that's not a bad time either. The schedule was a little bit, I don't know, probably a little softer, not a whole lot, but they just had to kind of start at square one. I think, you know, the organization, whether it was David Stearns taking Lopez and releasing him or Carlos Mendoza deciding, hey, listen, Jeff McNeil's not getting it done. I'm going to insert Jose Iglesias. Improving the team, you know, on the fringes, which is what good teams do, you know, or good organizations do. And I think the Mets prior to this year have been very slow to do. Like, they just stick with their guys no matter what, and you're afraid to hurt somebody's feelings. Like, no, this is about results, you know. And after a certain period of time, if it's not getting done, we're going to try to insert somebody else. I think that plus Diaz coming back and Alvarez coming back, like, there was kind of this, you know, wave of things that kind of came together to get this team back on track, it looks like. And, you know, this series, I think, was the first one that they've lost since the team.
In over a month. Yeah, yes. First one that they've lost. So I want to get into Alvarez. You mentioned a number of other things, but let's go to Carlos Mendoza, because I've been talking about this now for a number of weeks. If you look at this outside of the Met vacuum, and yeah. I would have said, and we've talked about this too last couple months, if I would have said to you, you got no Kodai Senga, Quintana is your opening day starter, you got what you got at the back end of the bullpen, and you thought part of that was Raley, he's gone, right? Then Diaz was bad, then he got hurt. All the things that we can amount, even when they were 8 games under 500, it wasn't like they were underperforming, because that's kind of what the roster looked like.
Right.
What do you think of the job that Carlos Mendoza has done? Because it seems like a lot of other things are getting credit, songs, grimace, meetings, right? All sorts of different stuff. How much credit do you give the job of Mendoza and the balance that he had during the times that weren't so good to get them Duke back to this point?
You know, I think he goes under the radar, and in a lot of this is he's such a humble guy. If you watch his press conferences every day, he gives credit to the players. Like, it's nothing that he does, you know, that even though he's contributed and made a lot of, I think, savvy moves, smart moves, it's always about the players. Hey, they did this, they're doing this. And to me, I've been really impressed. You know, it hasn't been, you know, completely without, you know, a couple of rocky decisions. Like, I remember back in the London series there, he was very slow to go to the bullpen in a game, the first game of that series, and they end up losing that one. You know, he you know, pinch hitting stuff that, you know, and going to relievers like against Cleveland, and David Fry sitting on the bench against, you know, and he brings in a lefty, and then here comes, you know, young first-year manager Stephen Vogt bringing up David Fry, one of the best right-handed hitters in the game. They end up beating the Mets. So there's been a couple of those things like that, but not a lot, number one. Number two, you kind of expect that with a first-year manager. And number three, he set a tone, again, going back to that, hey, I'm not gonna, you know, accept certain, you know, bad play, and I want, you know, new players, different players. You know, there's a sense of urgency there. I think all of those things have played into it. And I want to give a little shout out to our buddy John Gibbons, the bench coach, because Gibby's had a little role in there too.
Gibby.
I mean, get into our little imitations of Casey. I'm telling you, I didn't do a thing, but Gibby, our boy, has had his influence on Carlos Mendoza.
I will say this for people who want to go back or listening and check it, and you could watch it somewhere on YouTube, but there's an old unfiltered episode that I did maybe about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. Gibby's been a frequenter, but I got to bring this up because it just explained to Met fans who are listening who don't understand the psychosis of this man in the best way. But he had his camera on and he was on vacation and he was doing the spot anyway, which I appreciate. But he's got a camera where you could just see the face. And as the interview is going on, he's peering back. He's laying in bed. His Clothed. He was dressed.
Yes.
His better half is like hanging out in the bedroom in the background, and he's just laying talking about sports. And this is a man who is just different. But that kind of the balance of the mentalities in that room seem to have worked in the coaching staff. Let's go to the players. There's been a lot of talk about the leadership issues over the last couple of years, and people saying, well, you know, Pete Alonso, he's not tough enough, or he's too corny, and the Jeff McNeil thing doesn't work, it's not good, and Lindor's not a good enough leader, and this and that and all of that. What does what they've done with what they have had and don't have said about the chemistry of those players? Do you think that they have – J.D. Martinez, you mentioned, been a big part of that as well, but what does it say about the chemistry of the players maybe being a little bit better than people thought?
One of the things front offices don't do a very good job of these days, they don't admit or don't acknowledge the fact that chemistry does matter. When you go to work on a daily basis and you like going to work, that matters a lot. Now, is it going to, you know, have a huge effect on your overall play? Well, maybe not. You know, especially in sports, like obviously you got to have a good team. You're going to have great chemistry, and then have a lousy team, you're not going to win. But enjoying being around your own teammates and having that interaction, I think matters a lot. I also think that, you know, having a core group that has kind of set that tone in the clubhouse, that helps too, whether it's one guy, which I don't think ever, you know, resonates in baseball, but a group of guys that are willing to kind of talk about things, you know, things are going wrong, you know, because during the course of the season, we see things that go wrong all the time. And I think, you know, that meeting, from the sounds of it, had a positive vibe to it, but it also talked about the things that they weren't doing well in kind of an open forum. You know, you have to be able to kind of address those things as a group and hold each other accountable, which you hear a lot of. But, you know, that group there, you know, every year has a different vibe to it. And I, you know, I said this before, but JD, he came into the scene a little late. I think it was 24, 25 games that he played before that Dodger series, you know, and that's at that point, that's enough for you to have a feel for the team and start to say some things too. So, you know, and he wasn't going to necessarily voice his opinion prior to that. You just, you know, inserting being new to the organization and being late. So I think that, you know, again, part of that whole, you know, thing that everything was coming together at the right time. It felt like the right time. I think Lindor had the feel for it. And, you know, consequently, they've played really, really good baseball. But, Alvarez is one of those hidden glue guys because of his, you know, energy and leadership, too. And I think, you know, even if you see that on the field, I think it's hard to ignore.
Yeah, last 25 games, saw a stat that he's played, because obviously he was injured in between. They're like 22-3. And I mean, he has been impactful, not just with the bat, it's the clutch hitting clearly stands up, but the energy and that mojo, that vibe, if you want to use it with the cool kids term, right, that he's got. How have you seen him advance from the catching standpoint? Because that was, you know, one of the things, we, you know, when any catcher comes in, unless they're a defensive stalwart in which we're worried about hitting, when a guy who's a power hitter, who's got thump, you're usually worried about, okay, can he play defense? Is he going to be able to handle the position? It's not talked about as much, but what have you seen from him on that side of it here as we look at now this full season outside of the injury that he's getting here at the big league level?
Yeah, so the obvious part to our eye is the job he does on framing pitches, right? I mean, that they were missing that aspect. The pitching staff was stealing a strike or two or three, you know, in a particular inning or more than that over the course of the game, that exponentially helps a staff, a rotation, and get you back into, you know, favorable counts if you're a pitcher, you know, that kind of thing. I think just having the confidence to throw to the corners and feel like you can get a strike that is, you know, a steal strike, you know, occasionally. But I think more than that, you know, and this came out a little bit last year with like Verlander and Scherzer, like those guys don't give out faint praise, right? They give out praise if you deserve it. And they praised him last year for his leadership, his game calling, his preparation. And I feel like it's just continued and gotten better this year. And, you know, he's more comfortable in a leadership role and more comfortable calling time out and going out and talking to a pitcher, you know, if they're struggling. Or I'll use this example, because I did this game for SNY recently. When he's got Quintana on the mound, and Quintana had struggled a little bit, And he's, you know, recognizing that Quintana has a really good, cutter into righties. And he's not afraid to go in there and call two pitches in a row. You know, Quintana's stuff has gone backwards a little bit velocity-wise, but not being as predictable, for guys who are, fringy average, fringy average stuff. Like, he really gets the most out of those guys, too. So when you talk about that number 22 and 3, that is absurd to think about. Unbelievable. So he deserves way more praise than he's gotten.
I want to kind of shift gears a little bit, because now we kind of assess where the team is. Okay, you look, and Met fans, I try to be fair with those who don't know me who are here on this podcast for the first time. I could be hard on the team, but I'm going to be optimistic and realistic. They're a game better than the Pirates. They're two games better than the Nationals. So they're two out of the wild card, but they're not that good at the same time. So the question is, and all the questions now become looking towards the deadline, because you don't bring David Stearns in to make the mistakes of the past. He knows this team is not ready in certain ways. He knows that young players need to be a part of this who are going to need time at some point. So before I get into Alonso specifically, and I want to, we can talk pen help and other things. If you're sitting there, you're in the spot, you're in a conversation with Steve Cohen, you're David Stearns. Are you looking at this and saying, we need to add because we can get into the playoffs and it means something to get in? Are you staying pat because, hey, we're not that good, but we don't want to give up our space? Or are you looking to grow for the future and dealing with what the fans are going to do to you if you do that?
Right. I think they're set up to have a good future with their system. They can do both. Like the good teams do both, right? So the Dodgers do both, right? When they're in these type of situations, they want to get to the postseason and then just see what happens. And there's value in getting to the postseason for some of the young players who haven't experienced it, like Vientos and like Alvarez, right? Some of those guys who haven't experienced that, and are going to be a important parts of your future, or any of your pitchers that haven't gotten there, whether it's, let's say David Peterson, whoever, I know McGill they just sent out, but I'm hoping he's going to come back and pitch well. Any of those young guys that come up and get that opportunity. But here's the thing. You're not going all in. You're not trading a couple, you're not trading your top five prospect, your top six prospects to chase something that, maybe maybe if you're lucky, you get in as a wild card and you're done in the first round, or you're even done in the second round, which would be it feels like a miracle right now that they would ever get to that point. But it is possible with the mediocrity right now in the National League. So I think that he will add, if they stay in this situation, they obviously need a starter. I think they need one in addition to Senga, but when Senga comes back, if they take a starter and put him into the bullpen, that gives them a little bit more depth. They definitely need bullpen, not just Diaz coming back. So it's pitching, I think, is what they need. Starter, reliever, one of either, or maybe it's a couple of relievers. And just see where it goes. Hope that, you can get in there. I think they have as good a chance as any of those teams that are in it. I mean, Mets, Diamondbacks don't look very good. Giants, mediocre. Like all those teams that they're in the mix with, they're two back. Of that third.
None of them are good.
I'd say this, they're as good as the Cardinals too. The Cardinals aren't that good either. So, and the Cardinals right now, we wake up today and they're the third wild card. So they have a chance. I think they need to, go for it. We'll say for a postseason berth, but not go all in.
Yeah. Two things. One, they need pitching depth, and wherever it comes from, whether it's the back end or the front end, pushing things to the back end, they need depth because they don't have enough numbers. One of the things that bothered me even during the hot stretch that a lot of people didn't talk about is they're sitting there, 10 out of 12, but every starter is going five innings. And you had like one start where Severino went seven, I think, and every other one literally was like five and a third. They don't have the bullpen to deal with that. No. You can say what you want about Smith, but, he'd gone two, right? Raley already. Diaz, different thing just for 10 games. But you look at this whole situation, and Duke, I'm worried about starters who can't give you enough length. Yeah. So if I don't have that, I got to have more in the bullpen to at least be able to give me some cushion somewhere, because you don't have enough innings. And Senga can't come in and throw eight innings. I mean, he's going to have to kind of warm his way back as well. Are you worried about the lack of innings heading down the stretch of a long season for the staff right now?
Oh, yeah. During that stretch, like you said, when they were winning, I think they had six straight or five straight where they didn't even finish five innings. They were like 23rd or so in innings pitched during that stretch. Yep. And this is the team that had the best record in the entire sport, but they were not giving you length. And that does have it does take its toll on the bullpen. And, you know, the kid Nunez has been a great find. Adrian Hauser has been really good. Sean Reed Foley, like these guys, you don't talk about them, you know, all that much unless you're taking a deep dive.
They're like offensive linemen. Like offensive linemen. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Right. And so, you know, I think that is a absolute concern that they have to address. And that's part of it. You know, even if they go get a starter that's a five or six inning guy, it's taking innings and eating up some innings that, you know, that allows, you know, one of their starters to go into the bullpen and give you length. I feel like Hauser is a really important guy in that pen because he can give you two, three innings. I didn't really particularly like him as a starter in this situation.
Yeah.
But I think where he is now, it seems to be a perfect role. You know, so the guys like that, I think, will play a role in that kind of, you know, bridging the gap to the back end of the pen.
Let me hit Alonzo with you before I let you run. I appreciate all this time. Look, this is not an easy situation, right? He does not deserve to be paid what he's going to get paid. Right. And at the same time, if any team needs him and should want to give him the overpay, it should be the Mets, because even though they're not good enough with him, they're going to have a bigger problem without him, right? Moving forward, how do you handle this? And I'll ask you this two parts. One, are you still open to listening to at least some extent? And two, what if the Cubs, if they're still in it, or Seattle or whoever, somebody bowls you over and offers you more than they should for a rental, and you know that with his agent where he is right now, you're not signing him, he's going out to free agency, can you pull that trigger with a team that we just said has a chance to get into the postseason?
Yeah, I think it would be almost impossible to trade Pete at this point. And unless, like you said, they got, you know, they had a big overpay, which is not likely to happen. And you could get, you know, and again, you had a viable replacement at first. And you know, so here's a scenario that might work. I'm not suggesting it would, but all of a sudden, Beatty figures out that he can hit major league pitching. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he comes up and he plays third. You move Vientos to first. And you trade Alonzo. I mean, it's not as far-fetched than you know, an inning, but it's not going to happen. But in that hypothetical, you know, you could talk yourself into that, trade Pete, get back, you know, some quality there. Again, only if it's a big overpay, and be better long-term. But I feel like with the Mets, they are set up long-term with some of these prospects, and they'll continue to get better with the draft this year and everything else. So I don't think they need to do that. And I just don't think there's a team out there that's going to overpay us. So I'm riding Alonzo out. But here's the last thing I'll suggest.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, please.
There's a good chance he's going to be another 40 and 100 guy this year. 40 homers, 100 runs batted in. Whatever the batting average turns out to be. And let's say it's trending up. Say he ends up 245-ish, somewhere in that range, which is not outrageous. And then he goes out to free agency. Now you're trying to re-sign him. Are you now? Who? Let me ask you this: who's more valuable on the Mets team between Brandon Nimmo and Pete Alonzo? If Alonzo gives you that number, those numbers, okay, there isn't an animal out there that's doing that consistently like him, and you know, trying to find that guy in New York. I'm going to argue that it's Alonzo, okay, and you can't pay him less than Brandon Nimmo. Like
no,
there's a structure, you know, so there's a window where, okay, you can sit there and argue all you want that he's not Matt Olson, which is the comp they keep throwing out there, which is, I think, 168.
And he's not. But he's going to get paid more than him.
He's going to get paid more because yes. Olson wasn't a free agent.
Correct. And it's a break.
So that's yeah. So you yeah. start to look
that's
at
Alex.
Where that,
yeah.
Yeah, where does that yeah. number go?
He's going to get paid. He's going to get $200 million. He could. I mean, look, and is he worth that? You can't ask that question in a vacuum. I mean, because it depends to who, right, and when. The last thing I'll say is this, and I go back to the worst deadline I've ever seen handled, and that, to me, with no question, is Ohtani with the Angels.
Yes.
Where he 2 weeks before the deadline, they're like six games under 500. He's healthy, hitting a home run and pitching in the same game. And they decide, because they win six out of seven, not to move him. He gets hurt and they get nothing, right? If the Mets have a swoon here, lose six out of seven, something happens in the next couple of weeks, does this change?
Yes.
Is that still something that's based on the standings?
I think it's going to be based on the standings. Yes. I think that if they're, you know, let's pick a spot. You know, the Cubs are five under. They think they're still in it, even though they're five out, but they're seven under. Okay. Yeah. So that might be the limit if I were the Mets. And I think you're going to see separation. We do every year, where the teams that are actual, you know, have a shot, mm-hmm. they pull away, and mm-hmm. the teams that aren't, the pretender, they pull back and sell. Yep. So, you know, we're going to know more in about 3 weeks. But if that happens to the Mets and they go on this little tumble, which, by the way, you look at their schedule, it's fairly weak.
Yep.
Fairly weak upcoming, right? They got a lot of Nats. They got the Rockies in there. Like, it's not that strong. So if they don't beat those teams that they should, the answer becomes obvious.
Duke, appreciate you. Thank you for doing this.
All right,
first
Casey.
Run. Believe in Mets. That's
like
it.
Being the first one.
You got to believe, of course. I mean, come on. Where else would it be more fitting than that? You can catch us on Believe in Mets and Unfiltered and everywhere else on the Believe Network, where, as always, we are presenting.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.